Nana Minsa is originally from Ghana. He began working for Sustainable Harvest International less than 6 months ago. Am I right?
Yes, you're right.
But already he has enacted, as I see, an incredible change in Everly's program. He's really a powerful force in organizing. He seems like he's connected to just about everybody down there in Punta Gorda in the Toledo district. He brings experience as an agricultural engineer, an agronomist, and an educator. And before joining Sustainable, he was teaching chemistry and construction at the University of Belize Toledo. And most recently, he taught Spanish and integrated science at Julian Cho Technical High School. I think Nana is definitely an educator, and I look forward to hearing his presentation.
Thank you. Well, much of the issues up is we have discussed a lot, and Phil have said much about it. You read about the mission statement, so I'm not going to say nothing about what we're actually doing in terms of what our mission statement is and the philosophy, which in Belize we say is that as SHI in Belize, we believe that the participants will be most successful when they identify and find solutions to their issues and concerns. And these are some of the goals which we are working towards to in terms of trying to make our people have a better life. We also, these are some of the goals we have attained or attained at this moment in terms of SHI Belize. As you know, we are in 4 countries. And some of the problems we are facing, which the first statement, which I said, Phil have spoken about most of the issues, so I'm just going to run over some issues and tackle the ones that maybe were not, because of time factor, he couldn't express much about it. But you know, the rain is a very serious situation. Some months we get about 1,050 millimeters of rain, so that should tell you, rain, we have a serious problem with rooms, but all the same, we are taking advantage of the rain. Neither can we fight against nature, but we have to make good use of what nature gives us. These are some of the solutions we are putting or encounter the problem that we face, solutions that we put to solve the problems that we face. Okay, now, some of our achievements, the fact is that we are dealing with 175 families in 25 communities. In Toledo District, we have 7 ethnic groups. 2 indigenous groups, that is the Mopamaya and the Kechimaya. We also have the Garifunas, who were basically the blacks who were brought to America, and they did not mix up with anybody. So they still remain black as I am. And we also have the blacks who got married to the Europeans, whereby we have the Creoles. And we have the Mayans who got married to the Europeans, and we have the Mestizos. We also have a little bit of Hindus and East Indians. And surprisingly, we have Chinese. So basically, these are the people that we have in the communities in which we work. When you look at the first left-hand side of the screen up, you find the Mopan. That's a group in a place called San Jose. On the down, we have the Kechi. Far right up, we have the mixture of the Mestizos as well as Creole. I'm there, even though I'm not one of these classifications. And the down part is also a Mayan crew. And the man in the middle is just a typical East Indian. Black, dark skin with straight hair. And these are the people that we work with in the southern part of Belize. Their population of Belize is 300,000. And US, you people have 300 and something million. So you should know where we are. And our area is 8,866 miles square. So just for you to have a, and we in Toledo are within 100 and something miles square that we work with. We also work with schools. But one of the interesting things is that we found out that the best way to educate people is not only going by the theoretical aspect of life. You have to combine it with what? The practical aspect. People may be smart to acquire the academic aspect of it, the theoretical way, but maybe they may not like to go to the practical aspect. So we try to use the two, both practical and theoretical, together to find a balance to help them. But one thing that we found out that working with schools, we work with five schools, primary schools as well as high schools, we found out that working, the students coming together to work, they're able to what, generate cooperation, how to cooperate with one another, how to interact with one another. We also teach them how to be patient in life. If I say patience, is that when I plant a tree today, not am I going to expect to harvest it today. I have to wait for time that, and attend to it, give it water, clean around it, and make it grow and I harvest. Look at the time involved. Look at the patience I had to wait for that. So this teaches the students how to be patient in life and not to arrive at what? Pragmatic decisions and rapid conclusions. These are some of the things that our practical aspect in terms of what gardening with schools is helping us to achieve. What Phil told you guys about, we are dealing with the Hoosta stove, which is roughly helping us to conserve 75% of our firewood. Gone are the days people just cut down any tree at all and turn them into what? Firewood, because they need it. That is their source of energy to cook whatever they want to cook. Sorry. The Hoosta stove was a system whereby we copied it from Honduras. Mm. It was developed by a woman called Hoosta. So we call it what? Hoosta stove. This Hoosta stove have a combusting chamber, which is 4x4, and all what you need. And I repeat here, the fact is that anytime we teach them how to prune trees, whenever they prune trees, their materials that are left, you might have used the leaves in doing what? We use them, the leaves for what? Composting, but the little branches which are left, we cut them into what? Pieces of what? In the smaller pieces. And these pieces are what they use in cooking as firewood. So in this sense, they do not cut down trees to do what? Use them as firewood, but they use the branches in cooking. That means we are saving the life of a tree. From we are also making sure that more trees and more lands are kept with trees on them. And the also interesting part of this Hoosta stove is that it has a regulator, but it's just funny. The middle part of it is where most of the heat come to. But if you want to regulate it, you move your cooking pot to one of the corners of that metal there, then you reduce the amount of heat you need for your cooking. If you want more heat, then you put it in the middle. It will cook faster. And once again, there is no smoke. So you don't see. Just put in your firewood, and there you go. So this is something that we are using to help our people who cannot afford stoves and issues.
How much does it cost to build one of those?
$75 to build one.
And how long does it usually take to put one together?
How long?
Yeah, how long will it take?
We use 2 days.
2 days.
Yeah. We also have fish ponds that we create for our participants, whereby they rear their own fish in their own house. How do they feed them? By picking up termites, ants from around their surrounding. If they don't have none, after eating, you just take the crumb of bread or whatever it is and just put it in there, and there you go. You keep them alive, and after a few months, they harvest them to balance their diet with that. And also, if the family do harvest a lot, they have to sell the rest. Exactly. But we make sure they do not end in some rivers to kill other, as I knew that was coming. Well, roughly, just trying to summarize, as I told you, I'm cutting it short because I will expect any question that comes. We do have some people who are now, we are helping them because a lot of our, excuse me to use the word, gringos have been coming down to Belize. And when they come, there's a place they would like to stay. Some of them do not like to stay in the urban areas. They like to go to the communities to see things for themselves and experience how a community life is. I know people like to challenge nature sometimes. So we try to help other people. We are now trying to help them to establish cabanas whereby people can rent, and the money they can get, they can use it to help purchase some basic needs that they need for their homes. So ladies and gentlemen, here I am, and thank you very much. If there are questions, I'm ready for it.
Go ahead.
Okay. This is kind of a question, kind of going back to what you were talking about, Sophie, with the insecure land rights. Like, when people are actually working with sustainable that make that, or does that make their land rights more secure in that sense?
Well, in terms, well, how do you get, once somebody is working with us, we try to make sure that you abide by all rules, which the land will not be taken from you. We also try to visit the alcalde or chairman of the village to give you a permission to obtain an area within the community to farm on. So in that case, yes, you are given some security to maintain that land that you'll be farming on. And based on our mission and rules, you will have to follow so that you do not cause any damage to something.
You don't have to have a lease to start working with SHI, is that right?
Yeah.
But by planting permanent crops and having productive land that's obviously yielding on a regular basis, then that will help with securing a lease if that's the way you want to go.
And in almost, Sophie's was on that area of police. In a number of the countries, most of the time, farmers do own the land. There is title, so it's not always in dispute or question.
Sorry, go ahead.
Well, are there issues with children living here in places where farmers own the land? Are there issues with lots of children inheriting the land and it getting broken into smaller pieces? Is that an aspect of the model or something?
Yes, Flo told you about, we have big families, the fathers that we have people with 9 children. As they grow, they have to marry, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And once they get married, the population is going up again, so they'll have to move to a certain area. So, yes.
In my experience, it's always very hard to work with the very poor, the ones that don't have money. I was with Trickle Up until last year. How do you include these people in your programs, the landless, if there are significant portions of
this,
or do you?
I didn't cover that many
people. The question is, how do you include landless, very poor people in a sustainable harvest practice?
How do we include them?
Yeah.
The fact is that, as Phil told you, on the 30th of August, we made a radio show, whereby we were trying to promote organic agriculture. A lot of questions came in. People, we even had calls from Chicago whilst we were in Belize. And that should tell you that we're able to cover the whole of Belize to tell people how important and how good organic agriculture was. A lot of questions came in. We gave them solutions and answers to their problem. After that call, we had more than 200 people calling in and coming to our office to receive assistance from us. So when this took place, we had a format that we put in place for people to apply. So we had to go through and see those who have jobs. Do you have job, yes or no? Do you receive any assistance from any organization, yes or no? These are some of the things we take into consideration. How many family do you have? How many are working within the family? What is your source of income? What do you grow? That gives us the ability to know if you are being able to cater for yourself or not, and what will be the serious problems that you will be encountering. That will let us take you to invite you to be part of our members. And also, after every 5 years, we graduate people. So once we graduate people, we try to
cooperate
new ones. So we take those aspects also into consideration. But as I told you, we have to look at your background and your source of income and how big your family is.
If you're talking about straight landless, there's not, you know, legally there's not a lot that because we partner with nonprofits in the countries, there's still not a lot that we can do directly. There are situations that do sometimes come up, but let me tell you, they are the exception. There was one in Belize where a donor of ours in the United States had bought some land, which happens. They buy some land in one of the countries, and they go, oh, great, I've got land there. They have no one to take care of it. You know, they're down there maybe once a year. So in those situations, sometimes we can pair up a caretaker, but that's very much the exception rather than the rule.
I think I saw maybe a hoe. I'm not sure if I saw any tractors or anything like that. Is it all hand tool farming? In any place you look at, is there any
The only tractor we have is the chicken tractor. I think you people know that technology, isn't it? Yeah, so we have the chicken tractor.
Very, very little. Mules, occasionally. It is almost all hand tool. The chicken tractor is a special tractor drawn by chicken. No. Chicken tractor is basically a portable chicken coop that actually sits on the ground. Put the chickens in. They have a great time because there's all new grubs and everything. And meanwhile, they're kind of stirring things up and fertilizing, and then you move it in a couple of weeks. Helps to prepare the ground. But no, there's very little, maybe an occasional horse or a mule. That's about it.
So we're talking about, I think his name is Don Carlos, who went from $400 or $500 a year. To several thousand dollars a year. That was, he and his back at work. His family, other farmers working with him, or was it just
No, he was, but the average, the average for the families working with us is their income increases 200% within the first 2 years and 400% within 4 years. And, you know, that after that, they become pretty stable. Does that mean that they add, that they may add animals? Sure. You know, to their, both as, but as far as mechanization, we haven't seen that yet. We're working in mostly, largely rural and remote. I can tell you that just getting there is, you know, half the fun.
These guys are physically working hard. I mean, that's what they're doing.
Yes, but when if you go down on a service tour, then actually what happens is you get to work hard, and they'll stand around in a group and watch. And I asked about that, and they said, "Oh yeah, well, you know, that's gringo TV." Yes, they work very hard. In the back?
Can you tell us where your financial funding comes from?
I did have that. We're very lucky as an organization. We're 9 years old. I can tell you that usually nonprofits at that point are very foundation dependent, and foundations like to cycle out. They like to go and start to help others. Over 80% of our funding comes from individuals. 14% from foundation and about 4 to 6% from business. And that's all of that. Our annual reports are available on the web. I'm happy to say that we're a 4-star highest rated from Charity Navigator. Everything about SHI I can tell you is pretty darn transparent. But we need more money. We want to hire 3 more extensionists before the end of the year, and that's not even in our budget, so.
Don't
you? two questions. One, do you do any work in urban settings? Do you work in cities at all to establish? Nope. Okay. And then the second question was that it seems like diversified production is a big part of what you're doing, but also the combining market production with subsistence production is a big part of it. I guess I was wondering what the balance between those two things is and whether you have a sort of explicit goal for... Well,
no, varies by region, what's available locally in the marketplace. If they are close to a tourism area or hotel or restaurant or something like that, links will be made to, mm-hmm. to sell to those entities. But primarily we look for opportunity to diversify at the same time still maintaining a portion in the staple crops because that's also part of what they're used to. There was, for instance, a gentleman who had a piece of vacant land that he hadn't used and he was hoping to do something with it. The extensions worked with him and did pineapples. And then he had neighbors who said, well, you know, you're only growing some, you should grow more. And he said, no, it's better to have a little last a long time than have a lot last very little. Makes a lot of sense. And he now has graduated actually from our program, and he's helping his neighbors. So you know, these things do spread, and it's interesting how they in turn adopt the ideas. Again, that generational transfer that we're seeing going on is pretty exciting.